Wednesday, November 9th. It seems like what has become another normal day in downtown Boston. I was on my way to the Occupy site when I ran into about 150 people from said Occupy marching through the streets of downtown. Police on bicycles cleared intersections to allow the marchers to flow through freely. Police and occupiers working together seems to be common in Boston since the arrests of over 100 people last month. Those arrests were over Occupy Boston expanding its encampment. That expansion did not happen. Boundaries have been set, with both sides respecting them, and the original encampment remained intact and still flourishes today. Across the river, Harvard students set up tents in the main yard. The provost responded by putting the yard in lockdown. That is, he is allowing the occupiers to stay and express their right of free speech and assembly, but he does not want outsiders taking part. To enter Harvard Yard right now, which is normally open to the public, one must have a valid Harvard ID. Harvard University police are posted at every entrance to the yard. This is a much different reaction to what happened across the country when UC of Berkeley students set up tents on their campus. Berkeley police were called in, and they beat the occupiers with riot batons and drove them off the campus. And one town over, Oakland, was a war zone just last week. Thankfully, things seem to be more calmer here in Boston. Maybe city officials are keeping a hands-off attitude and hoping that the coming winter will drive occupiers indoors. Who knows for sure? Meanwhile, Occupy Boston goes on, with lots of support from community volunteers. The various working groups keep a steady supply of food on hand to feed anyone. Volunteers wash dishes and keep the place relatively clean. Even city inspectors from the health department came down and found no serious violations in the food or medical tents. There is entertainment as well. For example, on Wednesday afternoons, there is now an hour of theme poetry. The theme for this week was veterans and their war experiences, to pay tribute as Veterans Day approached.
Tax the 1%!
Veterans for Peace, who have been very supportive of Occupy Boston, hosted this event. Janice Connolly, a Vietnam veteran, read her poem, Purple Heart and Silver Stars.
Purple hearts and silver stars are meaningless awards, meaningless after arriving home, home from the horrors of war. To still have emotions in your heart after the horrors of war, to still be able to look up at the clear night skies, to see the stars and still be able to cry, that is a meaningful award. Purple hearts and silver stars are meaningless awards when the horrors of war have left your soul cold. When the horrors of war have left you emotionless, tearless and emotionless under the clear night skies. I served in Vietnam from '70, '71, and I wrote that first time I visited the Vietnam War Memorial.
I guess I'm playing a bunch of anti-war songs. I really feel like the veterans are like the cornerstone to the Occupy movement, and I appreciate you, all of you who are here day in day, and just the issue that you have had to go through. You're a flesh and blood to result of the system that we live in, where a very few amount of people make the decisions for the rest of us. Not only does it hurt the rest of us, it benefits them and kicks us when we're down. And everyone here today in the Occupy movement is just an example that we're not going to let them roll over us anymore. And I appreciate everyone's tenacity here and staying here. And just you're going to get cold, and it's been cold, and it's warm right now, and we're all happy for that. But I just... I'm so inspired by this movement, and I thank you all, especially the veterans, for standing up.
Chad Armstrong, singer-songwriter from the band State Radio, paid tribute to Vets for Peace later that day.
Decorated general with a heart of gold that likened him to all the stories he told, past battles won and lost and legends of old. A seasoned veteran in his own time, On the battlefield, he gained respect for fame, with many medals of bravery and stripes to his name. He grew a beard as soon as he could to cover the scars on his face, and always urged his men on. But on the eve of a great battle with the infantry and dream, the old general tossed in his sleep and wrestled with his meaning. He awoke from the night to tell what he had seen, and walked slowly out of his tent. All the men stood tall with their chests in the air, with the courage and their blood and a fire in their stare. And it was a gray morning, and they all wondered how they would fare. So the old general told them to go home. He said, I have seen the others, and I have discovered that this fight is not worth fighting, no.
In between Chad Ermston and the veterans' poetry reading was radical political satirist Barry Crimmins. He started by talking of his friend, Howard Zinn.
Because I want to tell you about somebody, my friend and our friend, Howard Zinn. He was my friend, and he really would be so proud. I mean, not only would he be happy and thrilled to be here and to see what's happening, but he foretold it. Because Howard always called himself an optimist. Howard said that, you know, you never know what the spark is going to be. You never know what's going to turn things around. You never know what's going to change the world all of a sudden. I think Howard called it. Howard's not here, but Howard knew it was coming. And that's why Howard took the time to stop and listen to and be loving to and encouraging to everyone who was trying to do anything positive and progressive and decent and kind. And he's here today. That's his library over there. And he knew that someone would spark something that would change the world. And that's why in this wonderful year of the Arab Spring and the American Autumn, that we can think of Howard and we can remember our beloved friend from Boston. You people are the spark, and the multitudes are arriving because someone was smart enough to do the math and to show the math. Than to make it as simple as this, 99-1, 99-1. Anyone can figure that out, and everybody knows they're not in the one. Everybody knows they're in the 99. Everybody knows, and we brought it to them. We got to bring it to them as patiently and as lovingly as our friend Howard Zinn would.
Barry Crimmins addressing Occupy Boston on Wednesday, November 9th. He went on to express how mainstream media distorts the movement's issues.
These people letting us know that they're trying to tell us, they go on the corporate media and try to poo-poo us and try and say, oh, well, you know, they don't really know. They're naive if they think they can talk about economics. You're naive if you think you're going to continue to think you're going to saddle us with the debt for your Ponzi schemes. You're naive. We aren't going to pay for it. We're not going to take it. We've had it. Enough of that crap. Done. Forget it. You got enough. Try to scrimp by on the few billions you got and shut your mouth or you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be in a lot of trouble. Who are you kidding? And that's where we're here. That's why we're here. And you know what? Even the 1% will benefit when it fully arrives because they will live in a just and decent and fair place and not some place that's rigged and crummy where you have to feel guilty for robbing everybody.
Barry Crimmins at Occupy Boston. Elaine Bernard is the executive director of the Labor and Work-Life Program at Harvard University. She did a presentation on the benefits of unions, then took questions. She did have an amusing response to one of them.
The question was, how can we expand the notion of worker or maybe the recognition of common interests amongst folks who have to sell their ability to work and that really aren't great owners of capital. It is sort of funny. You folks here are being accused of provoking class warfare. How come when 99% are left out and 1% owns the vast majority of wealth that the 99% are accused of provoking class warfare? I mean, the most conscious class in America is the wealthy class, is the ruling class. One of the more interesting things is their ability to convince everybody else that, you know, there are no classes. Billionaires and homeless folks we're all in one boat together. I mean, it's just complete utter nonsense.
We haven't played actually, State Radio's played this song a couple times. It was before the, it was kind of came to, the lyrics aren't totally done for it, but it kind of came to happen during the, during 2008 when the crash and it first started happening and we first started realizing all this shit that was going on in Wall Street. And Occupy is just a wonderful reaction to that tragic corruption and greed that lives up in the high rises there in Wall Street and their connection with Washington too, which is also quite tragic. It's called Big Man for now. I'm gonna try it out on you.
Once again, here is Chad Ermston with State Radio's song, Big Man. His presence was quite popular as the crowd swelled to over 100 to hear him sing.
Dark brown, what can I do? My hay fever's exploding. Take two of the green and four of the blue. Don't call me in the morning. Oh no, wax is gone. Can I know they're wrong to understand what's it they say? But who's so highest, burn the brightest? But I'm not staring. No, I'm not staring.
Julian Weiser is a student at Berklee School of Music. He came down to hear Chad Ermston. He also shared his thoughts and compared Occupy Boston to the original on Wall Street.
I fully support the movement. It's just one of those things where you see a lot of injustice happening, and there are a lot of people here for different reasons, obviously. Some of them are really upset with the financial crisis, but as we just heard, there are a lot of people who are upset with other things, like the war and the death penalty, and it's really just a group of people who are dissatisfied and who are coming here to sort of voice that dissatisfaction and try and sort of come up with some resolution. Well, having a big group like this and all these movements really allows an individual to see that they're not alone. And I think
that's
the most important thing. I was just actually in New York City yesterday at Occupy Wall Street. There were a lot of people there, and it was really interesting to see the dynamic between the two groups is so different between the camps and the way everything is run. I think that we really have a more stable movement here currently, just because I feel like the police are working more with us.
Yeah, they are. I've noticed that.
No, I'm not staring. Who so highest, burn the brightest, but I'm not staring. No, I'm not staring. No, I'm not staring. Because he's a big man.
Occupy Boston, now well into its second month, has really developed into a working alternative community right in the heart of the financial district. They have free university lectures, a free library, entertainment, free press, working groups, and more. It's a friendly place. All people and ideas are welcome. For a schedule and more info, visit their website, occupyboston.org, or drop by Dewey Square across from South Station anytime. For the Boston Community Reporters Project, I am Chuck U. Rosina.
The devil gonna dance.